We're doing Parashat Mikitz. So our Parashat begins Ayin Mikitz Shnatayim Yamin, at the conclusion of 2 years. Whenever you read about a conclusion, so it means there's a starting point. And the starting point for these 2 years is Yosef's interpretation of the dream, of the dream for the Sa'al Mashkim. Now, this culmination of 2 years is really the culmination of 12 years that Yosef is sitting in prison. And Paro has a dream. So everyone, this whole story revolves around dream. Yosef had a dream, and that's what got him down in this situation to begin with. He made Bala Chalamot al Azeba. He had his dream. When he was down in Mitzrayim, so he ended up in jail, and there the two Sarim had their dreams, and he interpreted for them. And now Paro has his dream. And this, in essence, is going to be our last dream. So at the end of 2 years, Paro is dreaming. And in his dream, he's standing by the Nile. And we know the Nile is the source of Egyptian sustenance. And Paro claimed, Li ori vani asitini, I created myself, I created the Nile, I am a god. And Paro sees from the Nile come up 7 cows. And the Torah describes his dream. Good-looking cows, healthy cows, and they're grazing. Now, cows were the idols of Mitzrayim. They used to worship the cow. Mm-hmm. And after those cows come up, bad-looking cows. And they stand next to one another. And then, cows that are usually herbivores, they only eat plants, these cows do something unnatural. They consume the good-looking cows. The bad-looking cows consume the good-looking cows. And Paro awakens. He falls asleep, he dreams again. And he sees 7 stalks, seven stalks coming out of 1 stalk, meaning it's like 7 branches, Sheva Shibolim, from Kanei Echad, and they're good looking. And then another 7 bad looking. And the bad looking ones swallow the good looking ones. It doesn't say they were standing one next to the other in this time, and the question is, how do stalks swallow one another? So one understanding is they just grew and they covered. In his vision, they covered one another. Because it wasn't even they swallowed one another up.
In your dream, you see all sorts of things that, like, if they're not logical, that's how you see them happen.
Okay, you could say that, but Chazal say usually you don't see things in your dream that you wouldn't think about by day.
Yeah.
Meaning you only dream things that are within some realm of normalcy. Yeah, so Paro awakens, okay, it's been a dream. And he's upset, so he calls his all his wise men. And he tells them the dream, and no one could figure it out. They all offer different explanations. They say you'll give birth to 7 daughters and they'll die. You'll have 7 wars. And all their explanations, Paro says, no, that's not it. And how does he know that's not it? Because Paro leaves out part of the story. Every time he describes the story, he tells them over only part of the story.
Okay.
And they go with that part of the story, and they can't figure it out. Now, we all tend to do that. Sometimes people come to Rav and ask a shayla, and they make a worst case scenario. And then only as they're talking, they say, oh, but there's another detail, which isn't fair. So if you're learning, that's one thing. But if you're asking a shayla, so then lay it out before him and let him decide. People go both directions. Sometimes they make it sound more cooler than it is, and sometimes they make it sound more cooler than it is. So that's what we're supposed to learn from B'nai Reuven and B'nai God. When they came, they just laid the facts on the table before Moshe. The one assumption that they assumed was already too much. Lay the facts on the table. Let him call the shots. So everyone's trying to interpret, and no one could figure it out. And Paro is very upset. So the Sara Mashkim, the officer who was in charge of giving Paro his drink, he always has the king's ear, just like we find in Nehemiah. How did Nehemiah make it to Eretz Yisrael? He was the Sara Mashkim out in Persia. So Nehemiah, the Saramashkin, was able to tell the king sees him, he's upset. One day he asks him, what you're upset about? So Nehemiah tells him, I just got word that the Jews are suffering in Jerusalem. And the king, who is Achashverosh's son, his mother brought him up as a Jew, his mother Esther tells him, you should know, you're Jewish. So he doesn't keep much of the mitzvos, but when he sees Nehemiah upset and he wants to, and Nehemiah tells him, I want to go back, I wish you'd give me permission to rebuild the base of Mikdash. So the son of Achashverosh has a Shegal Yoshevet Etzlo. His mother, the former queen Esther, is sitting next to him, and she tells him, hey, you, it's a good idea, do it, son. So he approves. So here also the Sar Mashkim is there, and he sees Paro upset. So he tells Paro, et chatai ani maskir hayom. Today I have to make mention of my 2 sins. One is the ancient sin, when you got upset at me, you put me in jail. And 2 is the sin that I over there I promised the guy I'd help him out and I never kept my promise. So I'm going to mention my sins today. Back when you were upsetting me for my first sin, for messing up your drink one day. So then I had a dream, and there was over there a young lad, a Hebrew, a slave for the chief executioner, and he figured out our dreams, and his explanation came true. So here we see an interesting thing. On the one hand, he says, you know, I messed up. I wasn't fair to Yosef. I promised him I'd help him out, and I didn't. So I'm going to mention that sin today. I should have paid him back. I promised him I would, and his explanation came true, and I never mentioned it to you. I didn't keep my word. On the other hand, so what does he go ahead and do? He mentions Yosef, but he mentions him, and he sticks 10 knives in his back. He says he's a lad. He's not no one who you'd really think is worth much. He's a Hebrew. You know, us Egyptians, we wouldn't even eat with the Hebrews. And he's a slave. So in Egypt, you can't appoint a slave to any high position. So Paro tells the Saramashkim, oh, you know this guy. So you go to jail and bring him. Vayishlach Paro. So Paro sends the Saramashkim. He sends this guy. And he tells him, you bring me Yosef. And they rush Yosef out of the pit. And Yosef has to shave and change his clothing and come before Paro. A person who's in jail is allowed to grow his hair long, because in jail it's not fitting to take a haircut. It's a horrible place to be in. Chazal tells, even in a Jewish prison, a person's allowed to grow his hair long. A person doesn't have to shave. It's part of the way a person feels when he's in jail. So Yosef's been growing his hair long, so now he's come before the king. He has to shave. The pasuk says, Ketz sam lachoshech. Hashem put a limit to the darkness. And Chazal teaches, a person is not supposed to give up from horrible things that happen to him. There are three things that are called choshech, and God makes a limit to them. One is jail. When a person's in jail, suddenly he's overpowered by human forces, and he feels like mankind is running the world, not Hashem. Hashem tells him, no, kitzam lachoshech, I've limited it. The second is illness. When a person has a situation where, God forbid, he's overtaken by illness, so then he feels like he's at the hands of nature. And Hashem says, no, kitzam lachoshech, there's a limit. And the third is galut. When a person is kicked out of his house, when a person is in exile, so again, he feels like he's at the mercy of nature. And Hashem says, Ketzam lachoshech, I put a limit. That's a situation of darkness, there's a limit. And when Hashem puts the limit, when the time's up, then the time's up. The Kutzker Rebbe said, why'd they run him out of the pit? Because that moment he was no longer supposed to be in the pit. So once his time is up, so at that moment he has to rush. That's it. There's no reason he should even have his hair long. Now he's got to rush. It's over. So that's what people always say in the situation of Shiduchim. Sometimes you date and you date and you date and you wonder, when am I going to get out of this? Remember also, when the right moment comes, when Hashem says, Ketzam lachoshech, then it's Vayiritzu, you rush out of there. You don't stay there a second longer than you have to. So, Yosef is brought before Paro. And Chazal tell us that in Paro's dream, he was given an explanation what the dream means. And Chazal tell us there are three types of dreams that come true. One is a dream that within the dream they explain to you what the dream means. Two is a dream that's repeated. And three is a dream that one dreams at Alot HaShachar. So, Paro is dreaming about what he was thinking about all day. Dreams, Chazal say, are mehirurei libo, from a person's thoughts. And what's he thinking about by day? The economy. What's the Egyptian economy revolving around? The Nile. So that's what he dreams about at night. And at night they tell him what the dream means. And he forgets what the dream means. And then he interviews all his advisors, and they don't know what to tell him. They give all kinds of explanations, and he says, nope, that's not it. And when Yosef is brought before Paro, so Paro plays a game. And he makes changes. If you look at the pasuk, you'll see changes. Paro tells Yosef, I've heard about you, that if you hear a dream, you could explain it. What does Yosef answer Paro? No, I can't do that. God should answer the piece of Paro. this is a rule in most situations. No one likes a person that takes credit. Even when your boss gives you a compliment, he doesn't want you to say, yeah, I did a great job. The second Yosef takes on a situation of modesty, he's gained twofold. A, he isn't hurting Pharaoh's ego. He's not saying, yeah, I can explain your dream, no problem. B, he's, so to speak, limited his liability. He's saying, God should answer you. I'm not so smart. Pharaoh tells Yosef, I dreamt that I was standing by the Nile, and he goes through the dream and he leaves out all kinds of details that we know from the first story of the dream and from Yosef's interpretation of the dream. He changes the dream. If you look through it, you'll see many changes. And Yosef tells him both dreams really represent the same idea. God is foretelling you what he's about to do. You're going to have 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And God is revealing to you what's going to be here. You're going to have 7 years of great plenty in Egypt. And then you'll have 7 years of famine that will totally destroy everything that happened during those 7 years of blessing. And no one will be able to tell that you ever had those first 7 years of blessing. And the reason the dream was repeated is because it's about to happen. That's an indication that it's about to happen now. And then he gives them advice. Tells them appoint an intelligent person. He should be in charge of Mitzrayim, and he'll divide the land and gather the food. Tax them heavily during these 7 years, and you will have these cities where you store the food, and the food will remain stored. And this way, the country won't be destroyed in the years of famine. And Pharaoh and his servants like the explanation. And Pharaoh tells his servants, look, he was able to figure out parts of the dream that no one else knew. So you see that he has prophecy, he has God's spirit within him. And therefore, he tells him, I want to put you in charge. The people tell him, wait a second, he doesn't know 70 languages. In order to be appointed in Egypt, he has to know 70 languages like you. So Pharaoh says, let's test him. And they test Yosef, and the night before, Hashem sent Gavriel to jail, and Gavriel taught Yosef all 70 languages. Here we see that angels also know the language of Aramis, even though ordinarily they don't like the language Aramaic. That's the language of the Sitra Achra. That's why they say Kaddish in Aramaic, because that's a language that all the Malachim don't like. But they do know it. That's why we say a person can daven in any language, except for Aramaic. Aramaic isn't a good language to daven in. The Malachim won't appreciate it. But every other language you could daven, except for if a person is standing next to the sick person himself, then we say the Shekhinah is right there, so you don't have to care if the Malachim like it or not. You could daven in any language. So Gavriel teaches him all the languages, and Pharaoh tests him, and with every language that he could say, he gets to go up one more step when he's talking to Pharaoh. Pharaoh had a throne that had 70 steps leading up to it. And every time he got tested, every language you knew, you could advance one step. Yosef reaches the top step, and Pharaoh says, very good. And Yosef says, wait, I know one more language. And Pharaoh tells him, what do you mean you know one more language? Yosef says, there's one more language that I know. Where's the next step? And then Yosef figures out that he knows one language more than Pharaoh, and he could really dethrone Pharaoh. So Pharaoh makes him promise that he'll never reveal that he knows more languages than Pharaoh himself. And Yosef makes that promise, and we'll see in 2 weeks from now that this promise is going to come in very handy. So Pharaoh appoints Yosef, and he tells him, just, you have to remember that I am Pharaoh. Now, what does the word Pharaoh mean? So there are different explanations. Pharaoh is a name like president. That's why we find the name Pharaoh all over, and that's why people refer to him as Pharaoh. They weren't calling him by his first name. And the Sar Mashkim tells him, Paroka Tafala Vadav, he isn't telling him by his first name, Bob, you were angry at me. But he's telling him, Mr. President, Your Majesty, you're upset at us. Just like the name Avimelech, just like the name Hiram, just like the name Shuldan or Amir, all kinds of names that different countries had as names of Your Majesty, Your Highness. So Paro is the name in Mitzrayim. That's why we find it from the time of Avram through the time of the prophets. So Paro tells him, I am Paro. And he gives Yosef his ring. Now when we go through the parasha, you'll notice that there are many, many places that this parasha corresponds to the story of Mordechai and Esther. story of Mordechai and Esther has many, many psukim that are aligned with the psukim in the story of Yosef and Mitzrayim. But one concept is the removal of the ring. So Yosef is dressed with all the royal clothing, just like Mordechai was dressed with all the royal clothing, and he has him riding on a special chariot, and everyone calls out before him, Av Rech, Av Bechokhma, Rach Beshanim. He's the up-and-coming star. And Yosef is placed in charge of Mitzrayim. Paro changes his name, which is a sign of ownership, and he names him Tzofnat Panech. You're the one that was able to reveal the secret, the hidden things. And he gives him Osnat, the daughter of Potiphar, which is an indication that Yosef never did anything wrong with Potiphar's wife. Why was Yosef in jail? Because they claimed he did something wrong. Now, he can't appoint someone as king if he's ever had any jail time. So what does Paro do? He says, no, the jail time was a mistake. We're going to uproot it from the court. And even Potiphar is going to admit it's a mistake. He's going to let Yosef marry his daughter. So Potiphar, of course, is not going to argue with Paro. And Potiphar says, no, of course it was a mistake. Right, Yosef was just all alone. We know Yosef was. But Paro's way of proving it was by telling Yosef, politically, you have to marry Potiphar's daughter. So Yosef marries her, and Chazal tells us she was a Jewish girl. She was the daughter of Dinah that was sent down to Mitzrayim. So Yosef marries a Jewish girl. And this is something that's going to bother his father Yaakov to the day he dies. When Yaakov meets Yosef, he doesn't kiss Yosef to the day he dies. He always kisses him at a distance. Yaakov doesn't want to kiss him in an affectionate way, because to the day he dies, he respects Yosef and wonders, what kind of girl did he marry, and what did he do all those years he was away from me? And as such, Yaakov always keeps a certain distance from Yosef. We know Yosef did right. We know Yosef stood up to the greatest test. But we also know that Yosef kisses Yaakov, but Yaakov doesn't kiss Yosef affectionately. Yaakov always has this room of doubt in his heart. Did Yosef really stand up to the test that must have been before him in Mitzrayim? And they never discussed those 22 years that Yosef is down in Mitzrayim. So Yosef is 30 years old, and he becomes vice president of Mitzrayim. And he travels throughout Mitzrayim, and the best way to know countries by traveling it, since after traveling it, he can make a game plan how he's going to tax the country, and he does. So he builds cities of storage, and he taxes the country tremendously, and he makes a huge storage houses. They can't even keep up with the count of how much food he's stored. Now Yosef has two children before the years of famine. Once the years of famine begin, he does not continue living with his wife, because when people around one is suffering, so one is not supposed to behave as though everything's all right. Chazal tell us, at a time when the world is suffering, one is supposed to be mishtatef betzar hatzibur. So even though technically no one was dying of hunger, there was food around, but there were years of famine, and the world at large was suffering. So after the famine begins, Yosef separates from his wife, because he cares deeply for the world. Yosef could have said, what do I care? My country has food. Not only does my country have food, I'm doing the greatest thing in the world. I'm supplying food to the world. No, Yosef doesn't say that.